Are you tired of the same old pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 3,000 hours of the best pro wrestling events from over 100 of the biggest names in the industry from over 15 countries around the globe. Get your free trial today at Powerslam.tv.
The following advertisement is sponsored by Beercade YEG.
Hello, you are listening to a commercial for the podcast Over the Top Rope,
the flagship podcast of the Wind Column Sports Network,
as well as a proud member of Backbreaker Media.
Again, this podcast is sponsored by Beercade YEG.
You can find us pretty well anywhere that podcasts are played, including on the iTunes,
Podbean,
the Google Play,
SoundCloud,
and on windcolumnsports.ca for all your previews,
reviews,
and breaking news from the world of professional wrestling.
Tune in every Friday on Backbreaker Media, a member of Wind Column Sports.
This is your main man, RJ, from the Ringside Rant, heard only on the Visionaries Wrestling Network. So go over and subscribe across all your major platforms, iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, to hear every great interview I have every Monday on the Visionaries Wrestling Network. Go over and follow the show's page on Twitter at @_RingsideRant. Follow the network's page at BizWrestleNet. And, as always, embrace the vision.
If you like podcasts and you are listening to a Backbreaker Media, then you should listen to me, Chris Parrish,
and myself, Manoya,
and the Sounds of Struggle. Because we are literally the most entertaining duo you'll ever come across in Western Canadian wrestling, baby.
We talk about things like wrestling.
And other sports we like.
Like wrestling.
But we won't talk about other sports that we don't like because it's not that kind of podcast.
Like wrestling.
I mean, we like hockey.
And wrestling.
And we like football.
And wrestling.
And we also like to drink beer.
While wrestling.
Well, not while wrestling, but while watching wrestling.
Yes.
Yeah. If you want to get into a conversation with Maniac and Chris Parrish, then you need to tune into the Sounds of Struggle live on Backbreaker Media.
Every Thursday.
That's when we hope to drop, but sometimes Mike Mellowaney doesn't do his job right.
Or we're too drunk to forget.
Yeah, that happens too.
Yeah.
He can bleep out the swear word because we weren't supposed to do that.
Oh,
but
I'll try not to swear. Ah, I can't do it.
Yeah. Let's face it. The two of us, we're real.
And spectacular.
And we're a little bit of all right.
Yeah.
We're also struggle-licious.
That we are.
That was kind of the cue. Supposed to be a struggle-licious.
Oh, sorry, I'm drunk.
If you don't want to listen to us, then no. You're stupid because we're entertaining. And if you want to listen to us, then come listen to us on Backbreaker Media.
Yeah.
Later,
reset.
Later, bitches.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Total Nonstop Anarchy. I am your host, Andre C., and joined every week by my co-host, the Danimal Daniel Jobber. How you doing, my friend?
I am wonderful. Danimal Daniel Jobber here with you as always.
I'm glad to have you here, buddy. I always am. I almost didn't have you today.
Yeah, that having some computer trouble, but show must go on.
Ah, brutal, man. Like, Skype just kills me sometimes, man.
Yeah, me too. It's pretty stressful today.
Yeah. So I got you on here. Hopefully, before we get into the show proper, I just want to how TNA lately to me. I've been watching TNA more now since I started doing these reviews. I've been watching the stuff now. Have you been watching any?
I haven't. I'd be watching it at work if I could, but they don't let me put it on. So.
If you can do anything, watch the women's division. Taya and Tessa are two of my favorite things going on in pro wrestling right now.
No kidding.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it highly. But we're going to get into 2002 TNA, ladies and gentlemen. And we are covering this week the NWA TNA Weekly Pay-Per-View number 8 from Nashville, Tennessee at the Nashville Fairgrounds on August 7th, 2002, 3 days before my 15th birthday.
Wow.
Yeah. That would have been, it was 3 days before when I would have turned 15. So, and yeah, this was a much improved show from last week.
Yeah, it was one of the better shows I've seen so far. I won't say the best because there's a little bit of filler content. But
it has one of the best matches I've watched so far in at least all these NWA TNA pay-per-views.
Oh, without a doubt. And the storytelling actually was pretty good for the most part, I thought.
Oh, very much so. So the pay-per-view opens with its regular video open as it usually does. It actually worked. It actually went through this time. And they go into the back and they're showing off Ricky Steamboat's office with Apollo and the Dupps standing outside his office waiting for him.
And Apollo looking stressed and pounding on the wall and stuff, creating a little bit of tension, a little bit of foreshadowing, and making you wonder what's going to happen.
And the Dupps just standing there looking stupid.
Yeah, as usual.
So they cut back to the ring, and it is time for match number one of this pay-per-view, and it is the Spanish announce team taking on the Flying Elvises.
Yeah, they jump right in. The first time I think they've been called the Spanish announce team.
I think this is the first appearance of the Maximos.
Oh, the Maximos are brand new too, right? So yes, Joel and Jose.
Joel and Jose, and then
the Maximos and the Amazing Red, our good friend Mr. Figueroa.
Yeah.
One of the two in the company right
now. One of the Figueroas, yep.
And not saying they're related, but they have the same name, which is cool. Versus our buddies, our pals, the Flying Elvises.
No. The Flying Disco Infernos.
The Flying Disco Infernos. Well, actually, I was impressed. Jorge was the most one who looked like he was actually an Elvis almost.
Yeah, but I just think with their get-ups, to me, it just makes me think of disco.
Yeah. That's funny. Actually, I was called Disco Dan by an old buddy of mine just for the hell of it. Makes me think of that.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway, so the match starts out. Early on, we get a pop-up fireman's carry drop from Sonny Siaka on the Amazing Red.
Pop-up Samoan. Cool. Be a pop-up Samoan drop. Like, think of a Samoan. It's a Samoan drop, pretty much, yeah.
I guess, yeah, it's a backdrop is Samoan drop. That's right.
Yeah.
I was wondering if it was actually a Samoan drop or if that was a modification of it.
I heard the announcers, they called it a pop-up follow-away slam.
Follow-away slam, yeah.
But, it's not right, no. Like, if you threw a guy up, then you caught him in front of you and then threw him behind you, like, threw him off, that would be a fall away, but that was a pop-up Samoan to me.
Right, because you catch him in the front and then you throw him over your head, right?
Yeah, that would be a fall away, but he caught him in the fireman's carry and then dropped backwards.
Yeah, like a Samoan drop. Yeah,
to me that looked like a Samoan drop.
That is a better word for it, yeah. It's close. He's kind of close, but or maybe he screwed up, who knows?
Yeah, I think it's just the announcers being dumb.
Yeah, probably. So anyways, led by Siaki, the Flying Elvises do a sit-out version of the shield slam.
The shield bomb, yeah.
That's pretty awesome, except they sat out with it rather than just throwing him to the ground. Pretty cool.
Yep.
First time to see shield, shield! Sort of.
Elvises, Elvises!
Anyways, they mentioned that Ricky Steamboat was really upset with Puppet and suspended him from last week's show this week's show because Puppet got a gun. Puppet got a gun. Oh, you missed that one.
I will never forget that.
I wrote the whole little bit there on that song. So.
I will never forget that.
I'm glad you're glad. You
and I'm talking that. About your terrible singing on that song.
Yeah.
On that song.
I can do terrible. And sometimes I can even do good, but you know. More fun.
Yeah.
And what a back body drop by Sonny Siaki, sending amazing red over the top rope onto his partners. That was pretty sick.
Yeah, like, just sent him flying up in the air, like, good few feet up.
Yeah, it was pretty well done. And then, of course, Siaki kind of waves off his partners, and they get all frustrated and pissed off and walk away from the corner to the announce booth, leaving Siaki to his own devices, and they talk about things on the mic with the announce team.
They spent, like, a majority of this match at the announce table.
Yeah, for sure. And it's funny, because the other team's called the Spanish announce table. I'm just saying. But
anyways, the Spanish announce team, not announce table.
Yeah, that's true. Team, table. It starts with a T.
Spanish announce table is a podcast.
That's true. But at the table, you have the team. Yeah. Anyways, then the SATs get some nice triple team action where one vaults Siaki into a boot from another and holds him in a position where he holds his legs and rests his back on his knees. Some kind of a crab walk-y thing, I don't know what they call it. From this position, one of his partners jumps from the top turnbuckle and lands with both feet on Siaki's chest.
Red did the stomp, and I think Jose
did a leg drop.
Siaki's
head, yeah. Sick triple team combo image. That was really neat.
Oh yeah, I liked that very much.
And surprisingly, the fans didn't seem to appreciate the SATs, though. They were all behind the Elvises, which is kind of weird because they're more heelish than the SATs.
Well, I don't think they were behind the Elvises. I think the crowd was just really behind Siaki.
Oh, maybe.
That's what I see. Because when the other Elvises came in, they didn't seem to like him that much. But when Siaki came in and did his stuff, the crowd really enjoyed it.
Oh, it's just Siaki they seem to like. That's weird.
To me, that's what it seemed like to me anyways.
You would favor the guys who are being, you know, showed up all the time, his partners. But yeah, they're all booing the Amazing Red and the SATs, I found, which I kind of found surprising.
Yeah, they're behind Siaki.
Anyways, Amazing Red does this cool shooting star press he calls the Red Star Press. A little later on, Jorge and Yang continue to sit at the announce table, talking with the announcers, leaving Siaki to his own misery. They ask Jorge to sing, and he reminds us all that he has left Siaki down on Lonely Street at the Heartbreak Hotel. He sends a bit of passive aggression in him in that one, yeah.
Oh yeah, very much so.
Anyways, SAT does another six-three-man combo, doing a two-man dragon sleeper type move. I don't know that move that Natalya always does, where she you know, wraps up the legs and arms and kind of flips them over onto a crab walk kind of position or a crab hold.
Yeah.
And then making him vulnerable to Amazing Red to jump from the top turnbuckle, land with both feet again on Siaki's chest. You know, for sake of armor, we'll just call it the coup de grace.
Pretty much, yeah.
And then of course first the Amazing Red does a jump from the top turnbuckle, the other two guys are doing the hold, and then the coup de grace thing from Amazing Red. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
Mixing that two combos up. They're both amazing, anyways, how they really good tag team wrestling where they do those three-man hold and attacks from the top turnbuckle. It was good to see. I haven't seen anything quite that exciting
since the Ghetto Blaster. I just found in my notes, they call it the SAT stretch. It was like one guy got him in like the Mexican surfboard. Dan O'Brien's surfboard move.
Okay.
He had him up. Like, he brought him up. Then the other guy grabbed the head. And the other guy let go of the arms, like, in a dragon sleeper. So he was held up by the legs, but the other guy had the sleeper on. And then Red came off with the coup de grace to the guy.
I did have it mentioned that it's the SAT stretch, they call it.
Yeah, the SAT stretch. Yeah, very much. I really hope so.
That was pretty cool. There was the announcers tell us that SAT was trained by Mikey Whipwreck.
Yeah, I was like, I didn't know Mikey Whipwreck was the trainer.
Yeah, I knew he had trained Amazing Red because I read that when I read his bio a few weeks back.
Oh, there you go. Well, that's maybe this is where these guys know each other from, is maybe they came up training together.
They probably did. That is where they.
That's where I'm guessing because they all seem very young.
Yeah, they are. 18 was the one guy.
Yeah, so all very young. They probably trained together. I'm guessing. Yeah,
probably just out of school, young whippersnappers. But anyways, and the SAT seemed to lay a whipwreck down on Sonny Siaki.
Oh, you say whippersnapper with Mikey Whipwreck, don't you? Jesus.
Yeah. Well, yeah, just kind of have the same. Anyways, Jimmy Yang goes back to the corner to offer Siaki a tag, but Siaki refuses again. Oh, he's going to get what's coming to him. Then the SATs seemed to lay down a jailhouse rock on him. Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Then the Maximos do a sick double team move they call the Spanish Fly. Another great move from the Maximos.
Yeah, they did it. Yeah, double team Spanish Fly. Like the back flick off the top into the rock bottom. I love it.
Yeah, it's actually a double superplex from the top turnbuckle.
Well, no, that's legit now. That move is called the Spanish Fly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, they mentioned it. They mentioned that they called the Spanish Fly then, so maybe it was new then.
Or if you know Frankie Kazarian, he used to do what he called, he called it the flux capacitor. But again, it was grab a guy on the top rope, do the backflip off. Paul Burchill used to do it when he used to do it from standing in the ring.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, it's the Spanish Fly. Yeah, that's what most people refer to it as. That was a double Spanish Fly, though.
Flux capacitor. That's some serious shit.
Yeah.
Anyways, then the Amazing Red hits his infrared from the top turnbuckle. Such sick triple team combinations from the SAT. Very impressive performance.
Oh, beautiful.
Seeing more of these guys.
And that infrared looks so good.
Yeah. And the second time we've seen it, and it's good every time.
Oh, yeah.
Same with the SATs go for the cover, but Jorge and Yang suddenly return to the match to break it up.
Yeah.
We'll rate that as a, what? Here they are hating on him on the microphone, and they come back and break up the pin.
But they don't, but I understand, they don't want to lose. Like,
they don't want to lose.
If he loses, that's a loss on their record.
That is true. And at least they have some sense of sportsmanship, I guess, you want to put it that way.
Yeah.
It was then Jorge and Yang start to take over. Yang does a double dropkick takedown on both Maximos. Then they double clothesline the Maximos over the top rope out to ringside. That sets up Jimmy Yang springboarding off of Jorge Estrada's back again, like they did that one week, and vaulting over the top rope onto the Maximos. This gets the crowd really into the match.
Oh, very much so.
Even Sunny, they were cheering for them. They actually got cheering for Jorge and Yang when they did that.
This is because they realized, okay, they're teaming with them again. Let's get behind them.
Because they're association.
Yeah. Yeah.
Theme by association.
But earlier in the match when Yang jumped up on the apron to get the tag, they booed him for it.
Because
he had been standing on the outside, and when he jumped up for the tag, they were like, bro, you suck, you're leaving Siaki alone. They were not happy with him leaving Siaki alone, but then when they saved him, the crowd turned back in their favor.
Even though he went to reach out for the tag, and then it was Sunny that said, no, I'm not tagging you. That's so weird, eh?
Yeah, but I think it was more like the crowd was mad, like annoyed at him because they left
him. Or upset at him. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Weird, anyways. The storytelling this one was a little shady, dusty, whatever, but anyways, and I'll go into more of that after, but anyways, while Jorge's dancing a bit to celebrate, the Amazing Red comes in from behind and does that crazy flip he calls the Code Red, putting Jorge into a pinning combination, and he gets the 1-2, Jimmy Yang says no as he breaks it up with a drop kick. Then Amazing Red tries to do a sunset flip pin combination on Yang, but Yang sits down on him for the pin, getting 1-2, and one of the Maximos says no as he breaks it up.
That was actually the Dude Buster move. Trent Peretta's Dude Buster. Or it's also Hangman Page uses it too, and Frankie Kazarian uses it. It's where they cut. It's an inverted pile driver. Essentially, it's an inverted tombstone pile driver. Like, you know how you hold them on the front and you drop with the tombstone.
Oh, yeah.
Essentially, you put them on your back, but the same way, and then you drop. It's the inverted tombstone. Yeah, Hangman Page uses it, Trent Peretta uses it, and Frankie Kazarian uses it.
Very, very impressive, anyways.
Yeah.
But yeah, everyone's saying no in this match. So much negativity.
Oh, right, yeah.
Then the Maximos try to do some sort of awkward double team combo.
It looked like he was going for a gory special, like, yeah, get him into the gory, like, but the dude just fell forth, so the one Maximo just kicked him in the side.
Yeah, they end up doing virtually nothing with it. Although one of them saves face by following up with a pile driver on Yang, so they had some sense of, we did something here.
It was so unimpressive.
It was, I rate that awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very weird. It just, like, didn't belong at all. It had to be a botch of
something. Oh, very much so.
And then the Maximos try to do their Spanish fly on Jorge Estrada again. But this time, Jorge counters it and drives both men down on the back of their necks from the top turnbuckle. I guess he just don't want to be their teddy bear.
Oh, man.
I know, got to do the Elvis thing. I just got to.
Yeah.
Gotta. Then Jorge and Yang get Amazing Red in the middle of the ring and both vault from the opposite turnbuckles into him. Two flying Elvises airborne. Putting poor old Red into a hunk of burning pain. They take a minute to pose for the crowd.
That was the Hardys of Vento Mega.
Oh, yeah.
Their leg drop splash combo.
Oh, that's right. It was a combo, yeah.
Yeah.
They had two flying Elvises in the air at the same time, the announcer said. Just like, which makes sense. You know, flying Elvises jump out of airplanes. You know?
Yep.
Anyways, however, while they pose, Sonny Siaka decides he wants to impose. I guess he don't want to let anyone step on his blue suede shoes. And he crawls in onto Red to claim the three count pin for the victory.
I thought.
What a glory thief.
I thought he did the right thing in this. Because, like, he had these.
Dancing. His guys are just dancing.
He's all serious about the match. They're showboating. So they hit the big event Omega. And then they turn around and they do their pose. He's like, you dummies, rolls in and pins him. To me, it made total sense that he should be pinning him.
I don't know, man. It was such a weird match. I mean, I get the storytelling. It was good. But the match itself was just so weird. I don't know. But anyway, Sonny Siaka raises his hands in victory and leaves Jorge and Yang crying in the chapel yet again. That's time about 13 minutes.
Actually, 11 minutes, 44 seconds. I timed it bell to bell.
Oh, cool, cool. But anyways, Jorge Estrada and Jimmy Yang seem to continue to put up with this shit. And once again, I rate this a what?
Well, Yang, I think Yang would be gone. Like, I don't think he lasts in TNA until about close to the end of 2003. And then he'd be in WWE by 2004. Working working with Tajiri. He'd be one of Tajiri's goons.
Did he have any other name, or is he still Jimmy Yang?
He was a Kyo and something else. I think he was Kyo. And then he became Jimmy Wang Yang, and when he took over, he did his cowboy gimmick.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Didn't he do that? He did a segment on WWE Network one time where he was in. He does a party van now. He drives around and he has people go on the party bus party van, and they all celebrate there. That's cool.
Yeah, he does that now. But yeah, he was he was Tajiri, one of Tajiri's two enforcers, and then he would be gone within about a year or so from this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good trivia. He actually ends up going back to WWE one year because he talks about how he does the party bus, and then he goes to the WWE. Actually, gets a chance to visit his old friends again. It was pretty.
Oh
cool.
Yeah, a lot of old wrestlers do that.
So the segment on WWE Network anyway.
All right. So we cut from the match, and they go to the announce table, and they're. Promoing all the matches for tonight: Apollo versus Jeff Jarrett, Ken Shamrock versus R-Truth for the NWA Championship, and AJ Styles versus Low-Key versus Jerry Lynn in a triple threat match for the X Division Championship.
However, giving away the Apollo versus Jarrett match,
yeah,
it's almost a spoiler for me. You just know what's gonna happen.
Well, no, didn't he make? Okay, so this is gonna come up in a little bit, but. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat makes this match in about half an hour later.
I know. I mean, he makes it into a different type of match.
I thought he just made the match. I didn't think. It sounded like he was only making the match, and I'm like, okay, this is dumb.
It wasn't very clear. He should have said, "You guys have this match tonight." Well, we're changing it now. He should have been very specific. I think.
Yeah, it should have been something like that. So they cut to a pre-recorded interview that Mike Tenay did with Apollo earlier in the day. Apollo's really pissed. Mike Tenay's wanting to talk about stuff. Apollo's like, let's get to the point. He's saying he lost respect for Ricky Steamboat because he gave Ron Killings a championship shot that Apollo was promised. And eventually, in the end, he just calls Steamboat a corrupt man.
Corrupt.
Is that about the gist of it? That's about the gist of it, right?
Oh, actually, I had a point on it, though. He goes, in his country, once you earn someone's respect, you have the respect for life. So what, because he's in America, now he can have respect for somebody and then all of a sudden not have respect anymore?
Pretty much.
What's the difference with the country?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. And then from there, we got cut to guess what?
Girls dancing in cages!
Yes! Yes, that's what we got. And from there, they cut back to the back, and their Angel Styles walks out of Dragon's office, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat's office, and then Ricky walks out, and Apollo wants to talk to Ricky Steamboat now. Ricky Steamboat says he's a busy man. He doesn't want to deal with this stuff right now. Then the Dups that are standing there start to try to talk to Steamboat, but he just walks off on them. And then the Dups start to follow him out. And then all of a sudden, Jerry Lynn just runs in and he starts beating the crap out of AJ Styles.
Yeah, and they have a backstage battle. Tables, chairs, they just go crazy.
It's just it's crazy, buddy.
The washroom. That was so awesome. And then Lynn drives him out of the washroom, and then finally they break him up.
Oh, yeah. It was a brawl throughout, and then security gets involved, breaks him up. So they
let them fight.
So they cut back to the ring, and JB introduces Rick.
I said the two are broken up figuratively, but seriously, they should be broken up literally by this time.
hey, they got a match in the next episode.
Spoiler alert.
We'll get to that. But so they cut back to the ring. JB introduces Ricky the Dragon Steamboat as he makes his way down to the ring. The Dupps run up to him, and then they're trying to say, oh, why don't you go over this? And he just says, do whatever you want. He doesn't care. It's approved. Like, he
big
just wants
mistake.
Them to bug off.
Big mistake.
So Ricky the Dragon comes down, and he sits at ringside because up next is the NWA Championship match between Ken Shamrock and Ron the Truth Killings.
Damn right, man. The match, yeah. Ken Shamrock versus Ron the Truth Killings.
But do
we're
going to
find out what's up in this match.
Did you know? I noticed something, though. Ken Shamrock came down with his belt.
Oh, yeah, that's the first time we've seen it, isn't it?
I think that's like the first time he's carried his belt to ringside. He carried it with him, and it was just like, I'm just like, oh my god, he actually has the title.
Actually has the belt.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. It's the first time.
I mean, that's what Dubs would say. This match is going to be Shamrock's toughest challenge yet.
I guess so, yeah.
The match starts off with a minute or so of ground game, submission hold attempts, nothing too exciting. Truth gets the match going by vaulting out of the corner turnbuckle attack, bouncing off the opposite corner, ducking under a punch with his sick move where he ducks under doing the splits, and takes Shamrock down with a one-legged dropkick, or as you called it?
The leg lariat.
The leg lariat, yeah. Most of the slow early action is so that Ricky Steamboat can confirm on the microphone that he gave Truth the match out of an understanding of the racism tendency to hold some wrestlers back.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, he doesn't want to come off like he's racist, but he's coming off like, yeah, race holds people back.
And it was part of my reasoning. He basically confirms it, and they didn't want to take too much of the thunder away, so it was kind of slow, you know, submission holds and moves by Truth. And it was Truth faults off the ropes into another beautiful takedown on Shamrock. And I was saying Shamrock really wasn't doing a lot early on except trying to make Truth look good, and of course the occasional submission hold, which holds on for only a second. Killings
yeah.
Just dominate the early part of the match, basically the first 4 minutes.
Yeah, it was mostly domination by Killings. Yeah, but like you said, the submission holds every now and again, but it was mostly Killings attacking on Shamrock.
Finally, when Ron climbs onto Shamrock into the corner to do a series of punches, 1, 2, 3, the Shamrock finally gets some offense, countering with a sit-out powerbomb.
The Shamrock.
What's that?
I don't know why I thought that's what you said, the Shamrock, so I just thought it was funny.
I said Shamrock.
Oh, I thought you said the Shamrock. I'm like, I misheard you. I thought that you said that. That made me laugh.
It does Shamrock.
Yeah.
Then after the men lay on the ground for about 30 seconds, Shamrock does an Irish whip into a power slam, then takes down Truth with a flying back elbow. Shamrock tries to do a Hurricanrama takeover, but Truth counters it, and the result is an awkward rolling moment, saved by Shamrock, turning it into an ankle lock submission on Truth.
Yeah,
that
looked really, really bad. Like, he went up for the Rana, and he goes backwards, then Truth just kind of stops, like, yeah. Bent over, then he just falls forward onto his face, and then rolls over.
We're going to rate that again. Awkward!
It was so out of place, man. It was just like Ron wasn't expecting it or something? I don't know.
It didn't work, whatever they were trying to do. It
was yeah.
But anyway, he tries an ankle lock submission to make it look like something happened. Boy. And Ron crawls to the rope to break it up. Shamrock clotheslines Truth over the top rope to the outside. And all of a sudden they show Father James Mitchell and the disciples of the new church suddenly looking on out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Then Don Harris comes down to ringside with a chair and sits down to make sure things are kept in order.
Pretty
Why?
Much. And then Monty Brown comes out.
And then they show Alpha Male Monty Brown and they're watching too. Very confusing, but making it obvious we're going to have some sort of crazy finish to the match.
Yeah.
How do you not have a crazy finish now? Like, but anyways, Truth suplexes Shamrock outside the ring on the mat and sends him back into the ring. The two men battle and Shamrock puts Truth into yet another submission hold. Yada, yada, yada. I'm really not very impressed with Ken Shamrock.
Like, okay, what bothered me about that incident, he puts him in an armbar and they lay there. And then Truth doesn't tap, so Ken Shamrock just lets the armbar go.
Let him go.
I'm like,
how is this guy champion? I just he's popular. That's it.
Yeah, he's a former WWE Intercontinental Champion. That's why.
Not,
and UFC Super Fight Champion.
Yeah,
that's why.
That's why. The truth can be told.
Yep.
Pun intended. Anyways. Truth runs at Shamrock. Shamrock vaults him over the top rope, goes outside the ring, and the two exchange blows. Then the fight begins.
Yeah.
All HC double hockey sticks breaks loose.
Yeah, so what, the disciples of the new church attacked Shamrock. Monty attacked Ron.
Oh, Apollo got a blow in, too, first.
Oh, yeah, and then, like, Don's fighting with Malice. Oh, Apollo attacked Truth, because he's pissed about him taking his title shot.
Yeah, how unfortunate this should happen, just because all these men were seen watching the match. How unfortunate!
Who could have figured that one out?
Yeah. Anyways, in all the chaos, carnage, and mass battling, Apollo hits Shamrock with a super kick, and then Ricky Steamboat conveniently rolls Shamrock back into the ring. The Truth hits his front face drop, reverse DDT thing he calls the Truth of or Consequences.
The diamond cutter, essentially.
The diamond cutter, yeah. And covers Ken Shamrock for the 1, 2, 3, your winner and new NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Ron the Truth Killings.
The most anticlimactic finish to a title match I've ever seen in my life.
The match was a bunch of bullshit.
Like, the match
was the title, and that's the truth.
The match was boring.
The truth shall set you free.
The match was super boring. Then
9 minutes. Wrestling action time, maybe a minute.
Nine minutes, 19 seconds. I was bored by 8 minutes and 30 seconds of this match. It only got interested right at the end when they got attacked. So he gets super kicked by Apollo, gets rolled in. He just hits him with a cutter and it's over. I'm like, what?
What? Yeah, what?
I was so annoyed by that finish.
Yeah, the match, that's why I said the match was a bunch of bull. Shamrock loses his title, and that's all there is to say.
But it was a history-making moment. He is the first ever black NWA World Heavyweight Champion.
That is right. That is the first time an NWA champion was held by a 100% African-American.
Yep. Cool. He's the first African-American to wear the title.
And
so.
It couldn't happen to a cooler, nicer guy. Actually, I've always loved Ron Killings. I'm very happy for him for that.
Yeah, I'm glad it happened for the guy. Like, he can at least put that on his resume.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe we're giving the match a bad rapper.
oh, that was bad.
Thank you very much.
So they cut to the announcers. They talk about how it's a historic thing, and then Ricky Steamboat comes back out, and he calls out Apollo. Apollo comes out. And he says, Apollo, like, after, like, waiting for, like, good 30, 40 seconds, Apollo comes out.
Yeah.
It was really weird. So Apollo comes out, and he says he can't run around like a maniac anymore. But he says, however, Steamboat will give Apollo a title shot. He has earned it.
And unquote, earned it, yeah.
Yeah. So this is where Jeff Jarrett comes out and says, wait a damn minute.
Our old pal Jeff friggin' Jarrett.
Yeah.
How convenient.
So he says... He says, in the biggest lie I've ever heard, for weeks, he has been patiently waiting for his title shot.
Wait, all patiently waiting meaning whacking everybody with chairs and beating the shit out of everybody.
And demanding title shots.
Yeah. But yeah, and of course, conveniently we know he happens to have a match with Apollo tonight. You know, how convenient.
Yeah, so he says, now he has the answer. Now, he said, now the answer has become as white as his skin.
Love that line, though.
What we have here is a case of reverse discrimination.
You only hear on TSN, folks.
Because he isn't black, Puerto Rican, or Hawaiian, he has been denied an opportunity.
I got the quote here. Kidding me? Just because I'm not black, just because I'm not Puerto Rican, just because I'm not Hawaiian, just because I'm not a minority? I've got to ask you one question, Steamboat. Why does a man like Ron the Truth Killings, and why does a man like Apollo, the Puerto Rican sensation, get a title shot and not me? Why? Why, Steamboat?
Yeah. So Steamboat says the bullshit ends tonight. It's going to be Apollo versus Jeff Jarrett, and the winner gets a shot at killing. So maybe I'm wrong here. He's just re-announcing the match. And
basically, all he's doing. And sending a stipulation now.
And then he's the special guest referee.
The sky, and what I'm going to choose my words carefully, and goes, and if you win, you get the truth.
Yeah. Remember those words, ladies and gentlemen? He says, if you win, you get the truth. That's all he says.
And he thinks about it. I guess you can kind
of
predict.
And he makes himself the special guest referee of the match.
Yeah, that was cool.
So from here, we go to, oh, please, God, no, Disco Inferno and Jive Talking.
Oh, wait. You missed Girls Dancing
in Cages.
Oh, sorry.
They cut away for Girls Dancing in Cages so they could set this elaborate set up. This time, the set, all the ugly couches, are gone. Thank God.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just replaced with a blackboard that says Jive Talking, written on the on the chalkboard. So Disco is not happy about all this, but before anything really ever happens, out comes, guess who? The Dupps!
The Dupps!
Oh, this is just going to get fucked up.
Fucked up.
Yeah. Thanks for that one, buddy. And then, so they're here to announce the first ever Dup Cup Invitational. Essentially, the new heart.
Because I sure don't.
It's essentially going to be the TNA's hardcore division, right? I have listed out the rules, and I will go over them.
Please
so
do,
they flip the chalkboard over, and it lists all the rules. So you got in this match, you need to get 10 points to win. So if you put your opponent through a table, 2.5 points. I don't know why there's half points here, but there is. Put an opponent through a burning table, it's 5 points. Put an opponent's head in a toilet, 2.5 points. If it has shit in the toilet, it's 3.5 points. If you goose a woman, which means grab her ass, or I don't know if it's sticking a finger in the ass, I don't know what it is, 2.5 points. If you goose a man, it's 3.5 points. If you nail Jeremy Borash, you know, punching him, I'm hoping that's what they meant by it.
Yeah.
Because yeah, they are rednecks. 2.5 points. If you nail Sarah the Ticket Lady, again, I pray it's just punching the lady.
Yeah.
2.5 points. If you use a farm animal, and please God, nothing sexual, 2.5 points. If you spank an opponent with horsey poo, which is like a...
Stick with a horse on the,
2.5 points. But if they like it, -2.5 points. If you introduce an opponent to Jay, 2.5 points. If you cry like a pussy, and this is their words, -5 points. If you put an opponent's head in a cotton candy machine for one full rotation, you get 10 points. And if you hit an opponent with a fan brought weapon, 1 point.
You know, I gotta say though, I like Disco Inferno's talking ability. I think he would. I don't know whether you like him or not as a person. He's a good talker.
Oh, he's a fine talker. I just don't think he needs to be part of this show.
No.
So stand up after the rules been listed. He takes off his shirt and reveals a picture of Goldilocks.
But he doesn't take off his shirt. He takes off his overalls. Immediately, you got to pull them down and show your underwear. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And then he challenges Disco to a match under these rules. Disco doesn't want anything of it. Then Paulina comes out. Just for, I don't know why, just to protect him, I guess. And then Stan then says, if anyone can beat him in this type of match, they will get one night with Fluffed Up.
Yeah.
Their girlfriend cousin. Ed Ferrara, the creepiest person in the world, accepts the challenge.
And that's saying a lot with knowing Jerry Lawler.
So, Ed Ferrara, with Jeremy Warsh in the ring, he gets in and he accepts the challenge. Then he's like, well, we're getting started. And he punches Jeremy Borash in the face. Then he rolls out of the ring and, like, tickles Don West's asshole. And he gets 5 points out of that. Or 6 points. He's at 6 points before the Dups even get to the ring. And then this is where Jerry Borash actually jumps on Ed Ferrara's back, starts attacking him. And he throws him off, and then they get back in. And he gets back in the ring, and the Dups are in, and Ed actually fights them off until Bo actually hits him with, like, a really strong clothesline. Like, they made Ed Ferrara look way too strong in this match. The one problem I had with this entire match though is it's Disco Inferno and Don West calling this match. It's the worst announced team ever. So they get the Dups get 2 points. You get a point each for I guess they have a combined point total. I don't know why. And they each hit Ed with chair. The rule was. Hit an opponent with fan brought weapon, right?
Right.
Does that include the fan's chair? Like,
fan getting him a chair? That's not fan.
The fan didn't brought. I guess the fan gave it to him, so I guess that counts. So they got 2 points from hitting him with a chair, and then Stan goes and hit Ed with his boot, but he says wait, and he throws it to a fan, and he said tells and the fan throws it back to him, and he hits him with the boot, and he gets a point for it. How is that a point? That's your boot, you jerk. And then Bo hits Ed in the face with one of the fans' drinks that he stole and gets another point for point number four. And then Stan grabs a cane from like an elderly fan and smacks Ed with the cane. And they're up 5 points. So right now it's 6-5 for Ed Ferrara.
You haven't got to the point where he goes after the lady in the ticket booth, right?
No. We're not quite there yet. So they go to the stage, and this is where Stan introduces Ed Ferrara to Jay. So they guess this gets them 2.5 points and gets them up to 7.5 points. And just so you know, Jay is a blow up doll.
Ow.
Probably covered in duck semen.
And what Jay was when they announced it. I thought it was Jeff Jarrett.
No. They're talking this blow up doll named Jay. They've named their blow up doll. That's the thing that creeps me out the most. So this is where Bo Dup goes over to the ticket booth. Who, with his old lady named Sarah, she's trying to break in, then she opens the door and just starts smacking him with a broom. So Bo gets no points out of this. And so we go back to the stage, and this is where Paulina low blows Stan up because he's getting in Disco Inferno's face. And then they start to smack, he starts smacking him with the chalkboard. Over and over again, and this pretty much continues for the rest of the match. Is Stand Up, just every time he stands up, gets hit with a chalkboard and falls back down. So this pretty much Stand Up's out of the match at this point, right? So this is where
Stand Up, you can't live up to the name.
So we go back to the ringside, and Ed Ferrara spears Bo Dup. Like this is like Goldberg level spear right here, just full on, just
When he did on the president or the vice president when he tried to.
Hey, the guy knows how to spear. He must have taken lessons from Goldberg, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then they get back in the ring, and Ed hits Bo with one of the fans' chairs, gets himself to 8 points. He hits him twice.
Once again, TNA's no concussion protocol here.
So it gets him up to 8 points, and then Ed low blows Bo up, and grabs horsey poo. So he hits, he literally Bo's pants are down.
Yep.
His butt's supposed to, he smacks him in the ass with horsey poo. The thing he, and in reality, so everybody thinks he's won right here.
Yep,
he thinks he's
Paul
won.
but
Bo liked it.
Yeah.
So he goes.
How unfortunate this should happen. You know, who would have predicted?
So Ed Ferrara goes down to 5.5 points. So we're at 7.5 for the Dups to 5.5 for Ed Ferrara. This is where Ed Ferrara goes to the outside to get a table. So just remember, if you put an opponent through a table, it's 2.5. But if you put him through a burning table, it's 5. So in my estimation, Ed Ferrara brought the table in, and then he looked like he was going to get something. And this is where Bo, he's only going for the 2.5, but he reverses Ed. Ed picked him up. And then he flips around and chokeslams through the table to get 2.5 points, and the Duffs get 10 points and win this shit stain of a match.
Yeah. Total and complete shameless filler.
Complete and utter garbage. Just garbage.
But it was sure funny.
No, it was just stupid. Oh my god, I'm so happy we don't have this anymore.
Yeah, it was pretty. 17 minutes. Taken up by this segment.
Yeah, you had the match went about maybe 6 to 7 minutes. Then you had all that crap, that jive talking crap beforehand. I hated all of this.
I hate it.
And then we cut away, and thank God we did.
Yep.
Because then we go back to another sit down interview where Mike Tenay conducts an interview with Monty Brown. So Monty Brown spends about 2 minutes just listing, 2 to 3 minutes just listing all his football accomplishments and how he became a pro wrestler. Like, a good, 2 to 3 minutes, right?
Yep.
Like, way too long. Then he starts downplaying, because Mike Tenay asked him about all this they things that Ron Killing's been talking about and they. And Monty Brown does a good job of downplaying it. Saying it's all about him. He downplays the whole racial thing, which I really liked about that.
Counterpoint.
But then Elix Skipper comes out of nowhere and attacks him with a bucket of yellow paint.
Yep. This is my house!
Okay, so my question is, So this supposedly happened earlier in the day, right?
Yep.
So when Monty Brown came out on the stage, shouldn't he be covered in yellow paint?
Ow, good point.
I think it would have sold it better than everybody being like, "Where's the yellow paint?" And then this would have explained it. I just think I would have liked that.
Yeah, it would have been cool. Meanwhile, earlier on.
So, do you know what happens next?
We got more girls in cages dancing.
You got that damn right. Girls in cages dancing. it's always pointless, but I love it. So we cut back to the ring, and it's time for match number four of the evening, and it is the first blood match.
How the frick does Malice not bleed half the time? I don't get it.
It's Malice with James Mitchell versus Big Don Harris. And even when Malice like slides into the ring, he stumbles as he's getting up and almost falls over.
Oh no.
Ugh. So Don West comes, Don West. God, I wish it was Don West in this match.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don Harris. Big, I'm just gonna call him Big Don. It's a lot easier.
I just call him Harris.
Big Don comes out and then he attacks Don on the outside. And this is essentially, I just chose that this was the start of the match. I never heard a bell. I only heard a bell at the end of the match. So I just went from when he attacked him. That was, to me, was the start of the match, right? Yeah. So Malice attacks on the outside and runs Don into the ring and then the barricade multiple times. Malice goes and grabs a chair, but Big Don boots the chair right into Malice's face. And then he like grabs him and then whips him into the barricade full steam. Like, they moved the barricade a good 4 feet. When Malice went into that barricade, like, he launched himself. Because it's his back, man. Come on. You can only bleed from the face.
Don Harris couldn't draw blood with a red crayon and white paper.
It's very true. They go into the crowd. They end up fighting by the concession stand. And there's, like, all these fans in line at the concession. They're turning on their blood just like, woo! And they're waiting for their beer. It's hilarious. And there's one guy in the foreground. Like, he's, like, in front of the wrestlers. And you see him. He's, like, jumping up and down. Like, he's so friggin' excited. By Don West versus... Or Don... Don Harris versus Malice. This match is shit. And this guy is so excited.
Or drunk and wanted to say hi, Mom, on TV.
No. He wasn't even looking at the camera. He was looking at them jumping up and down excited about this match.
He's definitely drunk.
Oh, I don't understand it. This both these guys bore me to death. Especially Don Harris. But... So, and then Don starts they fight around through the crowd, and then Don smashing Malice's face into the barricade repeatedly, and it doesn't break him open. Then he smashes a chair into his face, doesn't get nothing. After Malice takes the chair to the face, he just stands up and starts beating the crap out of Don. Out of Big Don. And then he gets Big Don to the bleachers, starts smack him into the bleachers. And then they start fighting through the crowd, and it's probably a good 20 seconds. It's just crowd footage. Because I can't find them in the crowd. This is my same shit from the last couple episodes I've been talking about, fighting in the crowd. You know these guys are going to fight in the crowd. Have a camera guy ready in that's on the other side of the barricade to just follow them. Yeah. Don't have your guys set in different locations. Have a guy... with a camera that's going to follow them through, or position one near the concession so you can follow them one way, and then have the other guy on the other side. I have another cameraman on the other side waiting. You have a production crew. It's not that hard. You guys are not indie wrestling. You are a full-fledged promotion. Do it right. I expect this from indie promotions, but a company with this much behind them? No.
Very poor.
Oh, it makes me mad. So they end up on the entrance mat where they're fighting, and then Malice beats on Don, goes for a powerbomb, but he gets back body dropped and then thrown off the stage, and he lands on the guardrail. Look kind of painful. So this is where Slash attacks Don, but Don just fights him off, no problem. Slash pulls out an ice pick.
That's what it was. I knew it was a foreign object.
But the ref said it looks like an ice pick, so I just assumed it was an ice pick. But Don just fights him off. And I don't know. And this is where, and then Slash just starts bleeding.
He drew blood on Slash. He can't draw blood on anyone else.
I don't know why. It's pointless. There's no reason he needed to bleed in this match. Really didn't. So Malice attacks Big Don as he's beating on Slash. So Slash, like, I don't know, and as they're fighting at ringside, James Mitchell attacks, but then Don West just kicks him in the midsection. And the mouse comes back attacking Don. He throws Big Don inside. And then they're fighting inside, and this is the weirdest point of this match for me. So Big Don Harris hits a, like, side slam.
Yep.
And then Big Don just starts bleeding out of nowhere.
Yeah, he had the ice pick in his hand.
Oh, did Malice have the ice pick?
Malice had the ice pick, and you see him using it on his forehead.
Oh, I didn't. Okay.
You're laying there. The ref didn't even see it. Not that it would matter.
I didn't see that because it's as he's hitting him with the side slam, and he goes down and he grabs his face. I was wondering what the hell. Okay, so he had the ice pick. Oh, I missed that. Okay, thank you very much. So Don West starts bleeding, and it's over. Malice wins at 6 minutes and 31 seconds.
Yep.
This, again, just out of nowhere. Like, the finish was out of nowhere.
For a red match, it totally blew.
The match sucked completely. So after the match, Malice holds Big Don. Slash hits him with a chair. Then Malice chokeslams Big Don. And that's it.
Yeah, they didn't even do the blood on his head thing.
No, because, well, it got spilt all over James Mitchell earlier in their match,
yeah,
remember?
Yeah, so he didn't have any left.
Yeah. So that match is over. Screw that crap. That was terrible.
Yeah. Although Big Don, of course, Father Mitchell has to say, "Cursed are the weak, for they shall inherit nothing." He had to get his last piece in.
So we cut to the back, and Goldilocks is looking for Taylor Vaughn. Instead, Shockey shows up, who's looking for Ricky Steamboat. And then he just leaves. So Shockey leaves, and then Miss TNA, Bruce, comes in, steals Goldilocks' mic, and goes to interview and runs into the women's locker room and interviews Taylor Vaughn and asking her questions. And she just starts attacking.
None of it.
And she's like, "You creep," starts beating the crap out of him, calling him creepy and shit for being in the women's locker room. And then it gets broken up, and this is where Bruce challenges Taylor Vaughn to an evening gown match, and we get the match. And I guess it's for the TNA, Miss TNA crown.
Yes.
And then out of nowhere, AJ Styles and Loki start brawling in. This is AJ Styles and Loki this time. Brawl into the women's locker room. And they brawl into the women's locker room until security breaks them up. Okay, I'm just like, why is he fighting with Loki now?
Yeah, there's no point. They're just creating hype for nothing.
Like, Loki doesn't seem like the guy that should be fighting people randomly in the back.
What's he got against AJ all of a sudden?
Well, he did interfere in his match the week before, but I'm still saying Loki is the kind of character that's kind of that low and subdued guy who waits to get into the ring to exact his revenge.
He's a little low key?
Yeah, very much, very very low key. But it just seemed out of character to have Loki brawling in the back. You could have just had Jerry Lynn and AJ Styles keep brawling, really.
They could have brawled the whole time. They could have flashed back every now and again to them by beating each other up more.
Yeah. So we cut back to ringside, and it is time for match number 5 of the evening. It's Apollo versus Jeff Jarrett for the number one contendership to the championship.
So we think.
And their special guest referee is Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Yeah.
One thing I'll say this, Apollo's music sounds kind of like a Ricky Martin song.
Yeah.
I swear to God, it's a Ricky Martin ripoff.
Living La Vida Loca, man.
So, this match starts out with a bunch of lockups, and then as a guy gets him in the corner, and this is Dragon stopping both men from doing close fist punches. He's really enforcing the rules.
Oh, sorry, I gotta...
Are you okay? Maybe that's what happened last time.
No, I don't think so. I saw it happen. It's asking me if I want to quit Skype. There we go.
There you go. Damn cats. Damn cats. They would have made this match so much more interesting.
Yeah, anything could have.
So they lock up, and mostly it's lock up back and forth, and it's Dragon stopping him from punching each other.
Yep.
With closed fists. And then lock up number 3, Apollo punches, but this is where Apollo actually punches Jeff Jarrett. And he gets him on the rope, Dragon blocks him, and then... Okay, I can't go through this match. This is a very boring match.
Mm-hmm. It's... They have some throwing people Jarrett throwing him into the steps a couple of times.
But... Yeah, they end up on the outside, Jarrett whips him into the steps, get back in the ring. it's more wrestling. Like, more there's not a lot in this match. Like, there's
the ending was good. That was about it.
Apollo hit a beautiful spine buster on Jeff Jarrett at one point. I literally wrote notes for this, but it's just a lot of basic wrestling.
Up and bleeding most of the time into his eyes.
Yeah, Apollo did get opened up at one point, but I don't know. It just it's not a very good match. Like, it's just mostly like two bigger guys putting holds on each other. Like, at
Jarrett
one point,
Enziguri. Ooh.
Yeah, at one point, Jeff Jarrett does apply the figure four. Apollo keeps the arm up at like he does the three drop thing, which I'm like, wait, he's not choking him. Why are you doing the arm drop?
Why are you going to sleep?
And then he ends up rolling it over. Jeff Jarrett grabs the rope and breaks it up. Another one. You know how Ricky was blocking the closed fists. Apollo gets up and does the corner 10 punches. Where are you, Ricky? I know Ricky was right by the corner, but like. So, I don't know. Towards the end, Apollo goes for an Irish whip, gets reversed. They keep dodging each other until Apollo hits a super kick.
Yeah.
And he gets a two count, but Jeff Jarrett gets his foot on the rope. So Apollo gets him in, hits him with a German suplex, and keeps the bridge.
Yep.
But both men's shoulders are on the mat. So so Ricky counts one, two. Jeff Jarrett gets his shoulder up, and Ricky counts three. And then he indicates to ring the bell. And he says, your winner is Jeff Jarrett.
Apollo thinks he's won, but he's totally wrong.
But because Apollo's shoulders were on, it was a double pin. But when Jeff Jarrett got his shoulder up, it became just Jeff Jarrett pinning Apollo. I understand it. I get it.
Why would Ricky Steamboat count the two if he knew it was a double pin? Because he said there had to be a definitive winner. If it's got to be a definitive winner, you don't count a double pin. It makes no sense.
I agree, but he's doing his ref job. If somebody pins somebody's shoulders to the mat, you're supposed to count.
I guess.
So that's part of being a ref. So your winner at 10 minutes and 14 boring-ass seconds, Jeff Jarrett. It wasn't like, okay, it wasn't boring. It just was in an uneventful match. There was nothing, like it was them working punches and chops, a couple drop kicks here and there, but nothing spectacular. You know what I mean?
I like Apollo's aggression. He does show it well.
Yeah.
Really, he's not that good of a wrestler, so it doesn't do much.
But there wasn't a lot to this match.
No.
For 10 minutes, there wasn't a lot to this match. And we're going to have a match later on that goes 17 minutes where it was constantly something going on.
Why not give them an extra 5 minutes from this stupid match, eh?
Yeah. So Apollo argues with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat as they go up the ramp, and then Apollo gets taken out by security. And this is where Ricky the Dragon Steamboat gets the mic, and he says to Jeff Jarrett, yes, he's won, and he's a man of his word, and he's going to give him the truth. He says it wasn't, but he never said it was going to be a title match. He just said he would get the truth. And he says that next week, him and the truth will challenge for the NWA Tag Team Championships. And Jeff Jarrett is super pissed about it.
Yeah.
Grabs a chair, goes to go after Ricky, but security stops him. I'm surprised Jeff Jarrett didn't just start whacking security.
Yeah, no kidding. Usually he does.
Yeah, and so it cuts back to the announcers. They talk their blah, blah, blah bullshit. And then we cut back to the ring, and it's an evening gown match for the Miss TNA crown between former Miss TNA, Miss Taylor Vaughn, versus the current Miss TNA, Bruce.
Hardcore soft porn.
No, this is just terrible bullshit. So, I wrote this note. Bruce is bowling shoe ugly in that wig and dress.
Yeah.
Why? This is my exact note. Bruce is bowling shoe ugly in that wig and dress. Why is this shit happening? I literally typed that.
Because he had to lift her up in the air with a delayed suplex, but showed her panties and bra.
Pretty much. So, Bruce tries to attack Taylor, but she hits an inverted atomic drop, then hits an atomic drop. Bruce gets a back scratch on her and slaps her, and then she slaps him back. He's essentially playing the woman. And he's fighting like a woman. Then he kind of just snaps and boots her in the midsection. Then Irish whips her and hits her with a knee to the midsection. hits a delayed vertical suplex, and this is where her dress comes down and everybody sees her ass.
Yep.
And then after the delayed vertical suplex, picks her up, slams her face for a couple first couple times in the corner. Picks her up, hits the bangarang, then gingerly takes off her dress, and he wins.
Yeah, that's it. That's
everything that happened in that match.
7 minutes of cheap filler content.
1 minute and 53 seconds that I wish I had back in my life.
And with the, and seven with all the other crap about the, you know, leading into it. Oh, yeah, just a huge waste.
And then after the match, Bruce strips in the ring. Shows off his very revealing lingerie. Like,
showing his ass. It's almost a naked rear end.
I mean, my exact quote after this. Like, seriously, what the fuck? Ugh, this is just... we're subjecting ourselves to this.
It reminds people that the match was complete ass.
So, we cut back to the announcers, and this is goes where Don West goes into his stupidly
usual
stupid...
Usual hype next week, yep.
No, this is where he goes off, he grabs the house mic, his face turns all red, and he looks like he's stupid. I hate this so much. I know Kyle last week said he really liked it. I don't know about you.
Just trying to hype next week, and it's not that good. Not, it's pointless.
It's like, just talk to us regularly. You don't have to go crazy and then try to sell us. Like, he's trying to sell us, like,
you're
like
not Hulk
TNA
Hogan,
gear. He's trying to sell us TNA gear during this.
Oh, yeah.
I literally wrote this. I wish he would have a heart attack and croak in the middle of this.
Nice.
Because his face is so red. He looks like he's about to have a heart attack.
Oh, that the guy in my play that the that everyone hates is supposed to. He actually has a heart attack, gloating about his victory. You hit the nail on the head. It would be so funny if it happened in this match too, or this situation too.
Yeah. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, we cut back to the ring, and it's time for the best match I have watched so far. I think in every episode I've done, including the WWE pay-per-views, it is a triple threat X Division title match between Loki, Jerry Lynn, and AJ Styles.
Styles, phenomenal then and phenomenal now.
The champion coming in is AJ Styles, and man, like, I gotta say this. During the entrances, I listened to Loki's music. It sounds like very Asian, if you catch my drift.
Mm-hmm.
It seems kind of racist. And then as AJ's music hits, they cut to the girls in cages dancing. They got to get one more shot. I don't know. Maybe. I have no idea. But they cut to get girls in cages dancing before they cut to show AJ coming out to the ring.
Remind us it's TNA, yeah.
Yeah, it's TNA. Multiple cons. So, let's do a standoff to start. And Loki and Lynn lock up. But then they say, ah, screw it. And then they hit a double flapjack on AJ.
Yeah,
I was like, I like that. Because they both seem to really hate AJ.
They recognize he's champion. Why not team up against him?
Oh, very much so. Yeah, Lynn and Key exchange a few chops. Then Lynn hits a huge Chill to World backbreaker for and gets a one count on Loki.
Yep.
I thought that I that's the one thing. Jerry Lynn, his Chill to World backbreaker, nobody does it better.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a beauty.
It's so a category special too, I think.
Oh, very much so. Jerry Lynn goes to whip Loki, but he drops toe holds him, does a couple kicks like to Lynn's chest until he catches but Jerry Lynn catches the foot, then AJ just runs in and just drop kicks Loki. I love every bit of this match.
That was beautiful.
Lynn and AJ start working on, but AJ reverses Irish whip and hits the snap power slam. But he doesn't go for the pin. He just gets on top of him and just starts laying in the punches. It really this
Give
match,
it the business.
Like this match, really sells the rivalry between these three.
Yep.
It really does a good job in that.
Or as I say, giving him the 13 years in the business or whatever that Jerry Lynn always says.
14, I don't know, whatever it was. He's giving him back his 14 years in the business.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they, like, AJ and Jerry Lynn go into this thing where they keep doing a switch into the German suplex position. Then Loki comes at them, and they just double back body drop Loki. I love it. So Lynn gets AJ Styles in the gory, gets him up in the gory special submission. This is where Loki comes in and drop kicks Lynn. And then AJ, and then so that Lynn lets him go and hits, like, the gory special slam.
Yep.
I thought it looked really good.
The three man moves in this match were just phenomenal.
Oh, we got a lot more.
That was only the first.
Loki and Lynn brawl into the corner, and he brawls into the corner. He goes back to AJ, and this is where Loki starts doing these downward. AJ's on his knees, Loki's standing up, and Loki starts doing these downward double chops to the shoulders of AJ. I'm like, I like that. And then he runs, hits a running elbow drop, and gets a one count on AJ. I thought these guys working in this match, just phenomenal.
And if you believe they all wanted to win with everything in their being with these, even going for one count pins.
Oh, very much so. So Loki gets reversed on the Irish whip, but he stops at the ropes, and AJ jumps up to hit the drop kick, but he falls to the mat. So Loki walks towards him. AJ hits the kip up heads, where he kips up and hits the head scissors over, and head scissors him over. Then he picks him up on his shoulders. AJ Styles uses the Ushiguroshi now?
Oh, yeah?
This is essentially the inverted Ushiguroshi. The Ushiguroshi face buster. He had him up on his back, then he flipped him over and dropped him face first into his knee. I thought that was just a phenomenal move, using the face buster Ushiguroshi.
Yeah, even back, especially back then.
Just the innovation from these guys in this match is phenomenal.
That's almost ahead of his time, I think.
Then AJ whips Loki off the ropes and hits a beautiful spin kick. So Lynn then attacks AJ from behind, but AJ grabs the ref and then kicks Lynn in the nuts. They are really trying to sell AJ as a heel here.
Yep.
But I don't think the crowd's letting it happen. Because he ends up being a face for a long, long, long time in this company.
AJ's just too good to hate for long. That's just the way he is.
Very much so. And then he hits that neck breaker on Lynn. Then he starts kicking and bunching at both guys. So AJ goes for a Rana on Lynn, but gets hit with a
back.
He jumped up on his shoulders for the Rana. But this is where he, Lynn throws him off, and AJ flips backwards, then he grabs him and lands an X Factor. It's like a backflip X Factor almost. I don't know what it is. I love that move. Lynn seems to do it all the time when he's in with guys smaller than him. He can toss him over. Loki and Lynn start punching until Lynn sends Loki to the apron. Loki goes to do the shoulder tackle through the ropes, and this is where Lynn gets his rope hung leg drop. I love that leg drop.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Lynn gets this is where Lynn grabs AJ from behind, runs him into the rope. This is when the coolest triple threat. Loki elbows him in the face. Then he hops up and over both men, rolls up Jerry Lynn, and at the same time he's just rolling up Jerry Lynn. Jerry Lynn essentially Germans AJ Styles over. And it's a double pin.
Yeah.
And then they both, but both AJ and Lynn kick out at two.
Three man sunset flip combinations. That's the best way I could describe it.
Like a sunset flip German combo.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought that was just beautiful.
Trouble is, who would have won if it was a pin with two guys on up and one guy on shoulder?
Well, because Lynn was pinning AJ, and then Loki was pinning Lynn. I would give it to Loki.
That would have been an interesting thing to happen in a match.
Because technically Lynn was beating AJ, and AJ was losing outright. But then Loki was beating Lynn, so I'd give the win to Lynn there. Or to Loki there.
Yeah, that's crossed my mind when they did that. Who would be the winner? It needs to happen, and what kind of solution they come up with.
Oh, very much so. Loki fights AJ, and they do a roll-up sequence. And then he gets AJ in the Dragon Clutch. Then Loki ends up fighting with Lynn and then gets Lynn in the clutch, but Lynn ends up reversing him and hitting a DDT. I was like, man, the transitions in this match are crazy.
It was incredible, breathtaking.
Oh, these guys are so good at this.
It's like a ballet with violence.
AJ gets Lynn to the corner, then does the moonsault dropkick where he runs up and then pushes off the chest, does a backflip. Then he runs back in at Jerry Lynn, but Jerry Lynn just moves and he misses the clothesline. And then this is where Lynn puts AJ on the top, then DDTs him from the top and gets a two count, but Loki breaks it up.
Yep. The crowd's chanting for Loki, nuts at this point. They love him to death.
The crowd is so behind Loki. But, like, another great spot. AJ's kicking Lynn, but, like, Lynn catches a kick. Then, like, flips AJ backwards. AJ flips backwards, catches Loki, and then hits the styling DDT. Like, his backflip. Like, he backflips into the inverted DDT. I'm like, what the fuck? This is so good. And then gets a two count, but Lynn breaks that one up. Man, like, all the stuff they do in this match is insane.
You have to, it's like ballet. It's perfect timing. Everything was bang, bang.
Yeah, and then, like, AJ and Loki are on the top rope. AJ's trying to suplex Loki. And then, so, Jerry Lynn comes up, does this, like, springboard sunset flip, bomb, taking AJ down while he suplex, like, it's this springboard sunset flip Tower of Doom. Like, it was beautiful. And then Lynn tries to cover AJ, gets a two. Then he goes and tries to cover Loki, gets a two. I'm like, this is phenomenal.
That's passion, man. You believe everything they're doing. You buy right into it.
Then they go into, like, the sequence where, like, a good minute they're just pinning each other, like, doing roll-ups. Like, it's just, like, just one guy would roll up another guy, then the other guy would come in and roll up him, the other guy would come and roll up him, then the other guy would come and roll up him. Like, it was, like, for like, a good minute they were doing that. I'm like, this is great. And then,
indescribable. I said, the match was ahead of its time, in my opinion.
Oh, so good. AJ Styles, like, goes and, like, goes, does this springboard, like, lion salt leap, and comes back, goes for, like, the styling DDT on both guys, the backflip into the inverted DDT. But, like, as he comes down, about to hit DDT, they got both guys pick him up and flip him forward, and then and slam him into the corner. Like, and then this is where Loki gets AJ on top, does, like, a drag, like, does the, where he rolls backwards off the top, and, like, does the hanging dragon clutch.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Like, just everything in this match was crazy. So, towards the end, Loki goes for the key crusher, but AJ reverses into a Hurricanrana, but catches Styles and hits Styles with the Styles Clash for a two count. Then Lynn then picks up Loki and hits him with a key crusher for two. Lynn then goes for the cradle on AJ, but AJ reverses it and ends up hitting Lynn with the cradle pile driver for two count.
Yeah.
So this, in the end, Loki goes for the title crush on Lynn in the corner, but Lynn gets out of the way and pulls the ref into the corner. The ref gets hit. Loki is then sent to the outside. And then AJ and Lynn, like, run in the ring and they collide with dual cross bodies. AJ rolls outside, gets a chair, hits Lynn in the head, does, this little dance. I don't know what the frig he's doing.
Yeah, so stupid.
And this is where AJ climbs up to the top. Loki rolls in and puts the arm over Lynn. The ref starts to count, goes one, two. This is where AJ comes off the top, hits the spiral tap onto them, bounces off. And the ref counts three because Loki never took the arm off.
Yeah, never moved or yeah.
And that's the end of the match. Loki wins the X Division Championship at 17 minutes and 17 seconds, and that match was amazing. Like,
that would have been match of the year candidate, I think, in that year.
5 stars. All right, screw you, Meltzer. 8 stars. I love that match. Like, I don't know. Definitely not 8 stars. Like, maybe that's probably a 4.5-star match. Like,
some of the best triple threats in history have people doing each other's finishers to each other. And like, they were doing it to each other all around.
Like, this was so good. Loki celebrates with the belt after the match, but you can see AJ on the mat kind of just really pissed about it.
Yep.
So, and then they cut to the, they cut abruptly to the back. And Jeff Jarrett's yelling, and then it shows Truth. And they're yelling back and forth at each other. Then they cut back to the ring, and AJ Styles is attacking Jerry Lynn, and they end up, like, fighting back and forth, and then they roll out of the ring, and then Jeff Jarrett and Truth come out, arguing with each other, with security in between them. Jeff Jarrett gets in the ring, and then he's arguing with Truth, and then it's just over.
Yeah. And this might have confused me if I hadn't remembered that these four guys are going to meet in a tag team match, championship match next week, and they all hate each other.
Yeah, bam, there you go. You got there is your biggest turmoil of a match. You got four men who hate each other and they're going to team up and face each other for the tag team titles. What the serious fudge? What the serious fudge, man? Like, oh my god. But overall, I really enjoyed this week, especially compared to last week's shit. Last week's shit show of a match, two weeks ago, that was crap. This was I actually quite enjoyed this show overall.
The overall show was very fun. I was laughing.
Even the Duff Cups, how shit it was still fun to watch. It was complete and utter garbage. Don't get me wrong. But it at least it was garbage that made sense. Unlike last week, everything was just garbage. Yeah, I enjoyed this show overall. You had two really good X Division matches with the opening contest and the X Division title match. Jeff Jarrett and Apollo, like I said, it wasn't horrible, but there was nothing to it.
A little bit of aggression, and I admired his viciousness, but that's really all it was.
It was very basic. That's all I'm going to say. It was a very basic match.
They're not good wrestlers. I don't think either of them are all that great. But Apollo just doesn't have the actual in-ring moves and moveset.
Yeah. Malice versus Don Harris, it was there. Like, the dumpsters there for I enjoyed it for what it was. It was stupid. It was just fun. Ken Shamrock versus The Truth, it wasn't a bad match. It was fine for what it was. True, and in the end, you got a title change. You got a storyline you're gonna go ahead with Truth being this oppressed black man who finally gets a championship. Yeah. I like that.
And I love the storytelling in this show. Like I said, even though the matches weren't all amazing, the storytelling and the story aspect of what all the matches meant were pretty good.
Every match had a story. All the stories made somewhat sense. I enjoyed it. I had a good time watching this show.
A random X Division match that's just fun to watch because it's that. Everything had something behind it that was built up over the past weeks.
It really did. Yeah, you had, Siaki, the first match really didn't have the enemy of him, but you had the Siaki story with his partners going on. And then AJ Styles, Lynn, and Loki, you've been building up for a while. You've been building the tension between these three guys for a while.
The only non-backstory match was the Dub Cup, but that was explained in 7
minutes. Hey, they gave him a backstory for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So, no, overall, I really enjoy this. You enjoy this, right? You had a good time watching this one.
This may be my favorite show so far. And I love Ricky Steamboat, too. So him being such a big part of it. I mean, he's my second favorite wrestler in the world, Ricky Steamboat.
Oh, yeah. This is phenomenal. I met the guy. He's super nice. Got to meet him at PWA. He was super.
I couldn't have gone to see him. I was kind of heartbroken.
Yeah, it was awesome to meet him. But, yeah, man, overall, I really enjoyed this. Danimal, thank you, as always, for joining me on every week on this show.
Oh, it's so much fun. Shows like this make it all worthwhile. It's so much fun to talk about it.
Even the bad ones, it's really fun to talk about because you get the shit all over it.
You get the shit, whatever, on it.
Yeah. So, plug your shit, Danimal. Plug your shit.
You betcha. Danimal Daniel Jobber, you can follow me on Twitter, Danimal Jobber, or Daniel Jobber, capital D, capital J. On Instagram, Danimal Daniel Jobber, all lowercase letters. I'm also thinking about doing a little bit of that TikTok thing under Danimal Daniel Jobber, so we'll see how that goes. And, of course, my website, danimaldanieljobber.ca, where I have fun content, interesting stuff. If I come up with new stuff, I usually put it on there. And, of course, the link to the Jobber Champion merchandise, another Backbreaker Media merchandise, which we have something for all sexes and ages. We have baby onesies. We got it all. And like I said, close to my heart is the Jobber Champion merchandise, which you'll find there as well.
Yeah, and then you can catch me on Twitter at that Canada guy, Instagram at that Canada dude. Please check
Follow
out
me Canada guy. Gotta say it.
That Canada guy. And then. You can check out the Backbreaker VOD, which will soon feature Real Canadian Wrestling, already features Monster Pro Wrestling, Pure Power Wrestling, and on our Backbreaker VOD service, you can watch Bar Wrestling, which is some of the best wrestling out of California, and where you can find that at backbreakervod.pivotshare.com, and also, don't forget, we are a division of Win Column Sports. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to Total Nonstop Anarchy this week. Thank you, Danimal, for joining me.
No problem. It's been a lot of fun, and we're having a great ride, and I'm looking forward to a lot more great shows.
And we will be back in 2 weeks with TNA Weekly Pay-Per-View number 9 from August 14th, 2002, 4 days after my birthday.
Yeah, well, I'll have to wish you happy birthday. And as always, jobber out.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us inside the asylum.
Hello, friends. This is Spencer Love, the host of Conversations with Love, the exclusive one-on-one interview series sweeping the nation, or at the very least, the great province of Alberta, Canada. Tune in weekly to Backbreaker Media, a proud member of the Wind Column Sports Network, as I host a member of the independent wrestling community here in Alberta, or wherever the hell I feel like interviewing somebody from. You can only find it on Backbreaker Media, a proud member of the Wind Column Sports Network, and proudly sponsored by Beercade YEG.